I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. April is Poetry Month, not the cruelest month, as T.S. Eliot wrote in The Wasteland, rather a time to celebrate the written and spoken word. Our guests are twin brothers and the newest poets laureate of Delaware, Nnamdi Chukwuocha and Al Mills, named by Governor Markell to be the state's ambassador for poetry, something they've been doing for many years. They believe that art can address the problems that young people face living in poor urban communities, things like fatherless kids, the lure of the streets, violence that can lead to death and incarceration. They are Delaware natives who grew up in Wilmington, began writing poems when they were quite young. In fact, their mother had them write instead of fight, and that launched them on their careers as poets. They've been featured on HBO's Deaf Poetry Jam, BET's Lyric Cafe, and on NPR's Poetic License. They've got a couple of collections of poetry, including Our Work, Our Hands, and a new one called Homework for Breakfast. Let me introduce each of them to you. Nnamdi Chukwuocha is a member of the Wilmington City Council. He chairs the city's Education, Youth, and Families Committee, and nice to have you with us on Radio Time.
Good morning. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Al Mills, and he's a community-based social worker. In fact, he's a therapist at Newcastle County, Delaware's Multisystemic Therapy Services. And Al, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. And let me begin with the tragic murder yesterday. There's much we don't know. A 16-year-old girl, Amy Anita Joyner Francis, was killed in the bathroom of Howard High School of Technology. It was early in the morning. She was beaten. There are things we do not know, but she died later at a hospital. And it seems that the city of Wilmington is in shock and mourning about what happened. And I just wanted to give each of you a chance to respond to that, because so much of what you write about is about young people who are at risk. Nnamdi, do you want to weigh in on this?
I'll just say, you know, definitely a tragedy. And for us in our work, and we've seen Sharon earlier, we were actually supposed to be visiting there today to speak to the principal about bringing programs and services or writing workshops to the students. So it was just very timely and stresses the need for us to really have services in place that meet the needs of our students. I feel that this just highlights it, you know, and it's a very sad, unfortunate tragedy that has shaken, you know, our whole city, you know, to its core. Hopefully some good will come from it.
Al, sometimes people say under these circumstances, you know, words cannot express. Do you think words can express?
I mean, it has to. I mean, we have to write ourselves a better life. We have to be able to take this tragedy and let the children write about it, speak about it, and create it. And so hopefully one day it won't happen again. So we won't have to be hearing the same, oh, no, this at school again, you know. So there's something that has to be done. And it starts with the pen, the thought process of that, you know, art is a part of change.
Well, I'd love to have you do a poem, Why I Write. And I have it in this book of poetry, Our Work, Our Words. You probably know it by heart, but should we start with Why I Write?
Absolutely.
It's Why I Write. I write for those kids who never had a chance to just lie in the grass and look up at the clouds. For the ones that hide on the inside when teachers ask for volunteers to read out loud. I write for the ones that never even looked up at the clouds without expecting to feel rain. I write for little girls that must double dutch near blood stains and don't know their father's names. I write to show the youth that there's far more important things for them to think and talk about. Besides the beef, fake beef between Drake and Meek and when the new Jordans are coming out. I write to give a voice to the everyday beautiful things like birds flying south and leaves changing colors to get overlooked. I write for all the fiends out there to swear out they never get hooked. I write for all the nephews out there that know the pain of seeing their favorite uncle go from being one of the coolest people on earth to just a junkie always begging for change. I write for relatives that can't relate to one another, for little girls who are looking for love and found themselves teen mothers. I write for the circle of poverty that never ends in the PJs and for grown men that prey on young girls these days. I write for the beautiful artists, the talented poets, singers, and scholars whose talent warrants it of athletes' dollars. I write because a man with a ball in his hand has never been a threat. That's why LeBron and KD can cast million-dollar checks. I write for jail cells to get filled before the prisons are even built. I write for those that see prisons as business and wardens as CEOs. Those who think, let's build these prisons, let's fill these prisons, how many people they can hold. I write for parents that don't have good parenting skills, like the ones that buy outfits rather than paying bills. I write because God's thoughts enter my mind in the form of rhyme, and my mind's rhyme takes you to confine some grimy urban places. Some are never which been seen by their faces. And when I address the fact that so many black teens never seen their father's faces, they live label me racist. So I write to share my love affair words with the children, because God is on my tongue and the world is in need of healing. I write because the children didn't understand the deaths behind the deaths of Big and Pac. I write because there's no more room at all for rest in peace, man's and Mookie's on my block. I write for all the mothers that had their children killed by guns. I write for all the I love yous the fathers never said to their sons. So I write. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's our guests, Albert Mills and Nnamdi Chukwuocha, reading or performing, I should say, one of their poems, Why I Write. And I have to say, it's very powerful sitting very close to you here, watching you perform this together. And obviously, for you, Nnamdi, you're kind of underscoring some of the things that Al is saying.
Absolutely. One of our uncles who got us into performing poetry told us very on that our words are like the canvas, and the more vivid you use your words, the clearer the picture is. So I'm trying to provide the undertones and help the underscore to make that picture a little clearer for the listener. So when they're hearing, they're seeing exactly what that picture that we have in our mind of our poetry, rather than a child or a family, just trying to make it the message is so central to our poetry.
I mean, it sounds like you write for almost every reason that it's possible to write, but in many ways, mm-hmm. to save people? Overstating that?
I mean, that is the ultimate goal. We want to say, even if it's just one kid's life, if it's one kid that we get to change, you know, doesn't pick up a gun, one kid who doesn't use drugs, one kid who doesn't skip school. I mean, one parent who doesn't curse at his kid, you know, if we can just stop some of the conflict, that's why we write. I mean, because to say that there is a different way, you know, conflict resolution, poetry can be a big part of that.
Well, and I mean, there's certain themes certainly through your poems. So I think we heard some of them in that particular poem about kids that don't know their dads. Sure. They don't know mm-hmm. Who their dads are. Their dads are perhaps their dad, or perhaps they're mm-hmm. in prison. Mm-hmm. Nnamdi?
Absolutely. I mean, big part of our poetry deals with that sense of loss and showing children how poetry can be a tool. One of my favorite poems from one of our young students, she wrote a poem to her father that she's never known, and she's talked about, you know, her graduation day, her wedding day, and all these things that he's going to miss. And instead of being bitter and sad, she just said that you're missing out. You know, I'm going to accomplish these things, you know, without you if I have to, but it'd be great if you were here, but I'm going to accomplish these things. And it was just so beautiful that she found that power in the art to have that voice and not be sad, not be just a hurt child. I mean, she's hurting, but she used art to deal with it. And that's to us why we write.
Mm-hmm. Well, you both have social work backgrounds.
Yes.
I mean, do you see poetry as a form of therapy?
Absolutely. I mean, we wouldn't be poets if we weren't social workers, and
really?
We wouldn't be social workers if we weren't poets. They go hand in hand. They're Al and they're Nnamdi. They fuel each other. And definitely our art is a form of our therapy, is a form of our community-based counseling services. Definitely.
You see that way too,
Oh, certainly. I do family sessions. I have the mother write to the kids write to the mothers. And I mean, it's very helpful. It's a way to link families together. And before they realize it, they're writing notes to each other and, you know, I love yous and sticking poems, you know, on the refrigerator for mom or, you know, and to see them go from, I mean, so much parent-child conflict to them writing notes to each other. I mean, it art can do it. Poetry can make it happen.
Well, apparently it worked for the two of you when you were young,
yes.
growing up. Mm-hmm. Sounds like there was a sort of typical, not be the typical sibling rivalry. And sounds like your mom had a really interesting idea.
Yes, surely. And it really showed us how, you know, although as brothers we're going to have conflict, it also showed us that what brought us together and the things that linked us, our family, our love, our goals, our desires to be successful were more powerful than anything that can try to divide us or that we had opposition on. So it used our love and it created this bond through poetry and through art and through self-expression. And I know my brother's heart because I've read it so many times on paper, and he knows mine because it's just we know each part of each other. I can tell you what my brother's thinking and he can tell you the same, you know, and we just know that. And I love my mother and I thank her for that gift of making us bring that out of us to share with others.
You want to add to that, Al? I mean, what did you write about? And you were pretty young at the time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, definitely an understanding early on that we had a gift and you guys have something to say and say it. You know, I remember being in the family and having little talent shows at home and reading poems when family came over and, you know, reciting poems. And so those were our first audience. Those were our first cheerleaders. No, you guys are writers, you know. So that it started there. And so it's no telling if we start to encourage these children what can happen. Mm-hmm. Where the next great writer is going to come from.
Do you think because you're identical twins, I mean, that there was more sibling rivalry because
I think it was more
you look so much alike?
I think it was more of a bond. I mean, once we realized that magnet, you know, it can either go against each other or attract. So we decided, let's put it together and do something stronger. So, yeah, and we my mother says that she calls it our twin powers. Once we tapped into our twin powers, it was over with then, you know. And we realized we could, you know, understand each other, thought, had our own little language, you know, this
Did
twin
you?
Language. Still do.
Oh, you still do? Oh.
Most twins
What
do.
Does it sound like?
It's like
a special language.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of hard to explain, but yeah. We just talk to each other without even, you know, no one else knows we're talking.
It's the way he holds his head. It's the way he points his finger, the way his pen is in his hand. It's constant
subtle,
communication.
Yeah.
And just I just know just by looking at him how he feels, what he's thinking, and I know exactly what to say to compliment.
And would you impersonate each other as when you were younger, thinking that, oh, I can fool this person?
I've always been a little bit more outgoing. Al has always been a little bit more outgoing than my brother. So he's always, you know, been the quiet genius in the room, and I've been kind of the, you know, loud,
so people can tell
one.
Just from your personality.
Absolutely,
without a question.
Yes, my brother walks into a room, and you know, he's there, and I walk in the room, and I'm trying not to people know. Like I was hearing something on CNN last night about Prince, and they were describing his personality how he was very quiet. I'm like, man, he reminds me of me, just being so quiet and just so conserved, and his art meant so much. That was always me. My brother, he was just the opposite. I mean, everything was important to him. He loves, you know, friendships. And I'm like, I'm cool with just having my brothers like that. All these other people, I'm cool. So, you know, it's just that balance.
Tell me about your name, Namdi.
And Namdi is a Nigerian Igbo name. And it means that my father's inside of me. So I changed my name when my father passed away. And our father was a gentleman by the name of William Hicks Anderson. He has a community center named after him in the city of Wilmington. Just a great local civil rights just icon within our city and struggling for equality and education for our communities of need. And when he passed away, there was nothing else I can do than to honor him for what he gave me and gave our community. So Namdi means that my father's within me. And my last name, Chukwocha, is actually my wife's name. So when I got married, my wife's from the Igbo village in Nigeria.
Oh.
So I took my wife's name, which her father was basically like probably one of the most greatest men I've ever met. I mean, if you think of a family man who's his, you know, the oldest, and he should have done this and done that, but he stayed there and took care of the family while his younger brothers and went on, and just a teacher. And so my last name. So my name to me represents probably two of the greatest men that I personally had in my life.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking with Namdi Chokwa and Albert Mills. They are known as the Twin Poets. They're also the Poets Laureate for the state of Delaware, and join us on Radio Times to perform some of their poems, to talk a bit about their lives, their relationship, and to take calls, 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. We will talk more and more poetry after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. April is Poetry Month, and we are celebrating poetry with our two guests, their twin brothers, the current Poets Laureate for the state of Delaware, Namdi Chukwocha. Chukwocha? I did that right,
yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. I practiced for 24 hours. And also with us is Al Mills. And you can join us by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Raheem from Yaden to join us, and then we'll do another poem. Raheem, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you for the poem today. And I've been listening to Radio Times for a while, and it's my first time feeling just compelled to call. I'm usually too nervous to call, but I just want to let you know that your poem, it does reach its people. And I was the guy who was on the road to either death or jail, and God turned my life around, And I have a family, I have my own business now, and I'm the uncle that's there for my nieces and nephews because several of them don't have their fathers around. So you're definitely reaching people, and your poem definitely compelled me to push even more in their lives to be the father figure. So I just want to say thank you and continue the powerful work that you guys are doing.
Thank you. Al, you want to say something?
Thank you, and appreciate it, and you keep it up. And I know one of the best parts of my life right now is being Uncle Al, you know. So, Uncle Raheem, keep it up. I applaud you. And, you know, because because you don't have a father, now you got a special uncle. And if you need me, call me. So keep it up. And God's blessings to you.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Raheem, for calling in. Did you want to add anything to that?
Just the same. I mean, God bless you. And thank you for what you're doing. And thank you for calling in because it means a lot to us.
I noticed there are a lot of references to God and the devil in your poems. Religious are you?
Our grandmother was the mother of the church, and now our mother is the mother of the church. So we grew up in the church, so we understand, I mean, good and evil. And even if we aren't in church every Sunday, we understand that there's a good and a bad, and it's a lot of bad happening in the street. So we just try to, you know, label it as God, devil, good, evil, so people can say it, you know, so...
Yeah, absolutely. And just that balance of understanding how church has changed, you know, to us over the years. But yet that message that we have and we're given through the church at a very early age, how it's still very central. Our poetry early on is probably the same as far as our spiritual place in the role of good and evil and in the role of you being the best person you can be. And there's always going to be challenges. There are always going to be, you know, you're always going to be tempted this way or that way, and to use your art as your place where you can, you know, embrace your power for change, changing yourself and changing the world around you.
I'd love to have you do another poem. This is called Dreams Are Illegal.
Absolutely.
I heard that dreams are illegal.
Girl, you're not going to be a doctor.
I heard that dreams are illegal.
Boy, you're not going to be a lawyer.
I heard that dreams are illegal, but I am dreaming.
Don't you know that dreams are illegal?
I heard that dreams are illegal, but I am dreaming. I had a dream. I had a dream I was in America.
In America?
When I was actually in the land of the free and the home of the brave. My boss came into my office and said, Hi Bob, how's it going? Why don't you take off early and here's that raise? And as I pulled my Suburban up to my Suburban home, I got the mail out the box, so I was approved for another home equity loan.
Great.
The Girl Scouts are there ringing the bell with cookies to sell. Of course, I brought a box. Hillary quieted down. Marmaduke began to bark. And then later on, my wife and the kids took a bike ride to the park.
Keep up, dear.
And later on, we took a bike ride to the store. Went down to the TV, got some DVDs to watch. Because dreams are illegal in the ghetto. What are you doing here? Don't you know,
dreams are illegal? What are you doing here? Don't you know that dreams are ghetto. Illegal? Bow, bow, bow. Gunshots. Gunshots ring in the heat of the night, followed by screams, violently disrupting my dreams. You see, in my neighborhood, I don't need to read the paper or watch the news to know that something bad happened around here tonight. But once the ambulance leave and the police sirens stop and the crowd disperses, that silence soaks into my soul, sobering my senses, and is often over-intoxicating society. And I try to relax, but the devil just won't let go. He keeps pointing to the signs that are posted all around me that read, dreams are illegal. You see, my neighborhood is the bottom of the borough where drugs get mixed. Here there are no brothers and sisters, just confused brothers and sisters. Here people drown in the backwash of the latest political scandal. Here the devil is in sweet control as dreams are stolen. And you know there is no honor amongst thieves, so dreams are stolen with ease. A high school graduate, barely 17, gives up her college dreams for a pair of tight jeans and a chance to be the next inner city queen. In the inner city, checks and basketballs bounce with regularity. Life and death in a mix with no disparity. Some children live for nothing and some children die for nothing. Every day, blue skies are gray. All they know is that they want to make dough. The devil has them chasing a colorless rainbow. And at the end, there is no pot of gold, just a pot of steam, which he exchanges for their dreams. You see, bona fide slaves are made in the devil's dream trade. Without dreams, you are equivalent to being non-existent. You see, our children need to be told they can achieve and that God bless those who hold on to their dreams. We got to take down the signs so the kids won't know that the devil is trying to make dreams, not drugs, but he's trying to make dreams illegal. But dreams are not illegal. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, our guests, Al Mills and Namdi Chukwuocha, reading a poem that they wrote called Dreams Are Illegal. and it ends with dreams are not illegal. And it takes us through this beautiful kind of bucolic suburban life with Marmaduke the dog. And then it shifts into the inner city.
The reality.
And the reality.
That we, so many of our children that we write for every day deal with, you know.
What's the reaction when kids hear a poem like that?
I mean, the kids really connect to it and they relate to it because you're writing about me. I like the same way Raheem said, you know, it's you're writing about me. I can relate to it. I was that kid. You know, I am that kid, you know.
Right. Right. And having that visualization of that first part of the poem where it's beautiful and, oh, man.
Picnics and bicycles.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden a shatter, there was dreams being shattered with the reality that I live in, and how every day the negativity in our community is still in our children's dreams, because all I see is violence. All of this is just taking, you know, a little bit of my dream every day. You know, it used to be in third and fourth grade, and, you know, yeah, I want to be a doctor, you know. And as in, you know, my fourth or fifth grade, and, you know, I think I want to be. By the time you get middle school, those dreams are gone. I care more about what I'm wearing to school than what I do once I get to school. And it shifts focus. So the community, we have to begin to support our children more and provide them with positive alternatives and just give them the support that they need them when they need them. And for our children to realize that their dreams are important, and we should encourage them to hold on to them. Though every one of us has something special inside of us. And when we realize that's the beauty, that's the joy of life, when we don't let that go.
In the poem says, so dreams are stolen with ease as a high school graduate, barely 17, gives up her college dreams for a tight pair of jeans and a chance to be the next, I don't think you use ghetto when you said this, but inner city queen.
Yes. And it happens. And I become more concerned about, you know, trying to get somebody's attention than chasing my own dreams. And it happens. And sometimes it's not always that I even realize that I've given up on my dreams. Right. Next thing I know, I'm just here and I'm stuck. Yeah. You know,
just one day at a time. I'm losing
slowly,
focus.
Yeah, that water where water dropping your dreams away. It's
Raheem said, you know, he could have gone either way.
Right.
Yes,
was that true for you? Or I mean, it sounds like you had like your parents were very involved
and a big extended family as well. And we and the communities were a little different then. We had a lot of community support. You know, a lot of teachers encouraged us, especially once they realized that the gift was there. We started getting pushes. Oh, write this.
You could write.
That.
You could talk.
Exactly. And that became our difference. And it really separated us from the other kids in the classroom where they understood. And art gives you confidence. You know, we're raising our hands, you know, like that's not, you know, I've read that before.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I was saying.
And you have a poem about not raising
absolutely.
Your hand.
Yeah, and that part about. That what art gave us, I think that's what really our biggest protection outside of our family, outside of our home, outside of our church was art. We knew what it meant to be artists. We knew that this was something special that, you know, you don't just splatter paint on, you know, on a canvas. You don't just pick something up, but it takes a dedication. It takes discipline to be an artist. And it gave us almost like the military. It gave us this sort of positioning in our life very early on that we knew we were focused. We knew that this was something like an athlete. You know, when you know you have that ability, you know, that determination Michael Jordan had after he got cut from the basketball team, and he knew what was inside of him, that drive that made him the best player in the world. That's what we knew very early on, that same drive and determination through our art. It gave us that support and really helped us find our voice and gave us a platform to say what we wanted to, first of all, to our community, to ourselves, first of all, then our family, then our community, and to the world.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Nnamdi Chukwuocha, and also with us, Albert Mills. They are twin brothers. They're the twin poets. They are the poets laureate for the state of Delaware, and we invited them to join us on Radio Times. As we talked about their lives, we're hearing some poems as well and talking about the role of poetry and art in their lives and in the lives of other people as well. 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. A tweet from Janine, she says, I love listening to poetry, reading it doesn't work for me, love this interview. And I'm someone who says I love poetry and I would much rather hear it than read it. And I'm embarrassed to say that. But there's something about maybe it's the discipline of the words on the page. But obviously and I notice you guys, you don't use capital. Oh, you do, but that's use a lot of lowercase. But are you more a hearer or is that where poetry lives for you when you hear it?
I enjoy both. I'm a big, you know, I love the art. You know, I love it on the page, but I see and enjoy the life off the page, and it's something special when it comes off the page, and you can reach more people because not everyone is going to pick that book up.
Yeah.
But this voice can be heard, and you know that they'll get it. You know, even if I'm just walking by, it's going to get your attention. You know, I think that's the part of the spoken word that I enjoy.
Yeah. How about for you?
I would agree, and just I love writing poetry, but performing poetry is something totally different. Mm-hmm. I love reading poetry, but performing it is just, I mean, that's, to me, that's life. And I know everyone has their talent. You know, I have bad hearing, so I have bad balance. So every 4 years, I watch the gymnastics in all at the Olympics. Like,
how do they do that, right?
Y'all. And when I'm writing and then when I'm performing, I feel the same way. I feel like this is the Olympics. It has that this is what I'm here for. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful, beautiful feeling where you know your purpose. People go through their whole lives and never find their purpose. Thankfully, we found ours very early on.
And found it together.
Right,
I mean,
exactly. Yes. Exactly.
I mean, with the help of our family, we found it. Right. You know, and that's why family is so important.
Since you mentioned it, Nandi, you have bad hearing?
Yes. I'm deaf in my right ear.
Oh, you are? Okay. Is that from something or that you know of?
I had the flu real bad, and it damaged the nerve in my ear, and I lost hearing in my right ear. It was a very difficult time, but, you know, made it through it, and it gives me a new perspective on life, you know, so I have to be attentive to my surroundings to know when people are talking to me and not so I won't appear to be rude because people stand there and talk to you and you don't
hear
them. So
time.
You have to be attentive. And so it's just a different, you know, position in life. And as a social worker, understanding that you're working with individuals with disabilities, and it gives me that strength to realize what individuals go through, whether it's their physical disability or mental health issues, that you know what it means to be going through things, and it makes me, I feel, a better social worker and a better artist.
Hmm. Mono instead of stereo, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you both were in the military, and Al, you were in the Gulf War, I guess what we call the first Iraq
Correct,
War.
Correct, yes. Yes.
And were you stationed were you in Iraq itself?
Yes, I was.
Did you see combat?
Yes, I did.
You did?
Yes, yes.
Has that affected you?
Very much so. It's something I still deal with, you know, go to groups over at the VA, and I have PTSD, and it's a struggle. It really is. It's some horrible memories, you know, and it's challenging, you know.
And does writing poetry does that help you?
I don't know how the vets who don't write, I don't know how they deal with it without it. You know, this is my medication. This is the way I vent. I get up. I have to. Get those demons out of me. Those ugly thoughts have to be gone. So I use my journal as therapy all the time. It's trying to get, you know, share with as many vets as I can and get them to write as well. Let's get it out of us. You know, don't walk around with it because we see the vets who explode and the horrible things that can happen. So let's get it out of us. Yeah. So it's a process, and I'm enjoying them. And the Poet Laureate's appointment has been able to give us a bigger voice and speak to some veterans as well, and it's amazing. Yeah. So that's a part of the blessing.
Well, I'd love to have you do another poem. This is Homework for Breakfast.
Excellent. Every day, Chris would say, "Homework, homework is what I dread. I'd rather go outside to play instead. Read this, 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 and this. That's all my teachers say day after day. Sometimes I think that only the kids who like homework can grow up to be teachers. How else can you explain their smiles as they give us homework in piles and piles and piles? Reading, English, science, and spelling? Sometimes I feel like yelling. Just 3 more pages to read, so I skim through it real, real fast.
The end.
Finally, I'm done at last. Aw, rats, I forgot about math. What's 5 times 5? Maybe it's 49. This math stuff is such a waste of time, especially when going outside is all that's on my mind.
I guess the answer is for each and every one.
Finally, I am done. Saying to myself, who cares, as I dart for the stairs and give a shout. Mom, I'm finished my homework.
Can I please go out?
Mom says yes. I run outside and have a ton of fun. And I came back in and I washed up for supper. And after dinner was done, I was so tired that all I really wanted to do was just watch a little TV and then head to bed. But wouldn't you know it, it's when my father said,
"Hey, Chris, bring down your homework so we can check it."
It took me so long to correct all of my mistakes that now it's time for breakfast. I have a bad taste in my mouth,
and I can't get it out.
You see, this morning, I had my homework for breakfast.
And this is a new collection, I guess, for young people,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Not that I can't relate to it. I have the struggles of homework. I think they haunt us forever.
Yes. And it's worldwide, you know.
It is worldwide,
The kids don't like homework, regardless of the country, continent.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter.
Or grade, kindergarten to college. That's
exactly. Let me read a couple of more comments. Really terrific show. I'm so grateful to hear these great language masters. That's a Facebook comment from Josephine. A question from Kevin. How does their creative process work? Do they work together separately? What is their creative space like? Mm-hmm. You want to take that out?
Yes. Our creative process, very unique being twins. I mean, there's a bond where, I mean, so often we're on the same page as we were speaking about earlier. My brother kind of understands me. I understand him. So normally we start with the title. Our writing process is we start with the title, like Dreams Are Illegal, for instance. Right. We were talking to children, and the young lady was giving, you know, we were asking, because what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, and they were saying these beautiful answers, doctors and lawyers, and there was one young lady being real negative. Oh, you can't do that. You can't even read. You can't do it. And twins said to her, dreams are not illegal. They could be anything they like to be. And from that statement came the poem, you know. So normally our writing process, we pick the title and then recreate the poem around it, and then we mesh it together.
And do you work together, or do you work, are you, you know, texting each other with language or words? Or
Sometimes my brother will write something and I love it so much that it becomes mine, that I said, I'm going to, you know, and you have this part, I'll take that part. So I think I have something that will go with that. So we share our writing process, a very blended process. And you know, we understand the strength of our message and trying to tie it together and make it as powerful as possible.
Well, let's take another short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are celebrating Poetry Month. April is Poetry Month, and we did not want to let the month get away from us without featuring some poets. And we are thrilled to have Nnamdi Chukwuocha and Al Mills. They were named by Governor Markell, Delaware's ambassadors for poetry. They are the Poets Laureate of Delaware, and they have been writing and performing poetry for many years now. In fact, featured on HBO's Deaf Poetry Jam, on BET's Lyric Cafe, also NPR's Poetic License. And they have a couple of books of poetry, including Our Work, Our Hands, a new one, Homework for Breakfast, and we just heard that poem. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. More conversation and more poems after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Today, a conversation with Delaware's newest Poets Laureate, the twin poets Nnamdi Chukwuocha and Al Mills. And they've been performing some of their poems, talking about growing up in Wilmington, Delaware, where they live, and also talking about the young people who they often write about and who are who they are dealing with in many ways as they travel the state as the Poets Laureate. I'd love to have you do another poem, and this is called Hurt People.
Yes, Hurt People. It's those hurt people that hurt people, but those hurt people can be healed before they hurt people or even kill. For if these words brought into the world will change things, of that you can be sure. We'll help them open doors and find cures, so that maybe one day those hurt people won't be hurting people no more. Whose thought you thinking anyway, though? You wasn't trying to be a thug just a few years ago. You was just a little lad who was mad he never knew his dad. You tried your best in school, but your grades were still bad. So now you saying forget school and hang out with those wannabe thugs, skipping school all day, drinking and doing drugs. You're all hired up, just walking around with your pants hanging down, a frown on your face, a blunt in your mouth, and a gun in your waist. Man, you doing just what the devil wants you to do. Giving your heart to the streets, giving up on school. Thinking it's just so much easier just to roll this blunt or throw this punch than it is being in school doing homework and book reports. Now you're in the streets doing crime, you're arrested and you're caught, ending up in court. But young black man, well, I see you. I see you not no thug. I see beneath all the liquors and drugs, it's just a hurting young man looking for love. That's why I'm taking interest in you, because I know the damage that hurt people can do. I'm trying to take the guns out our son's hands and replace them with goals and plans. Sometimes all you got to do is take a look and see. You don't even belong with that thugged out team doing ungodly things. Sometimes all it takes is just a little bit of common sense to realize if you keep hanging around 9 broke people, you're bound to be the 10th. So I need you to do more than just pull your pants up. I want you to ask questions so you can understand stuff and change your aim so you stop ending up in handcuffs. Because it's those hurt children who become hurt teens, who become hurt people with no motivation and dreams. In a world where at 16, school bells don't ring, only police sirens sing, responding to the hate that these hurt people bring. And I think I know when it started, when you became brokenhearted. Maybe it was when your parents divorced or when your grandma passed away. Because since then, you've seen many a sad day. But just think, she up in heaven looking down on you, don't want you living this way. The drugs and street life, it isn't for you. You're just going to end up in and out of jail or rehab like your uncles and cousins do. It's those hurt people that hurt people, but those hurt people can be healed before they help to destroy the life of someone else. For if these words brought into the world will change things, of that we can be sure. We'll help them find cures and open doors so that maybe one day those hurt people won't be hurting people no more.
Very powerful poem called Hurt People. And what, there's so many things going on in this poem, but what really struck me is just is looking beyond the mask. I think that, and a lot of teenagers do this. A lot of people do this. It's just this mask that's hiding all
and that's
the hurt. As
and that's, yes, very much. And that's where the poem came from. It was this little young man. He would come to school and he was just so angry early in the morning. But, you know, and every day was just angry. And then just day after day, I often say, being a social worker, we're taking these are some beautiful gardens. They're full of flowers, but it's just the inner city just piles so many bricks on the they can't see the beauty. So we just have to take the bricks off. And day after day, we're just removing bricks so they can see the beauty in themselves. So it was about taking that mask off, as you said.
Yeah. And then, I'm curious, what happened to that boy? Do you know?
I mean, it's many of a combination of many of boys. Yeah, but some of them blossom and go off to college and never get in trouble again. And some of them, unfortunately, many of our students murdered. Many of our students are sitting in prison, you know, but there are those who, you know, are married. I just went to a wedding of one of my, you know, young men, and it's beautiful to see him with the family and doing well and working. And so the blessing is there as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that our role as artists and social workers is using that art as a way in which to empower the children, because we're the ones, you know, pulling the bricks off, but pretty soon they become empowered through the art and through themselves and through understanding their positioning, their power to change their own lives, that they protect their garden. They protect, you know, this is my beauty. I'm not going to, rather you're my mother, you're my sister, you're my aunt, my grandma. I'm not going to let you throw that trash in my garden. So they become empowered in that way. And that's how I see that we fuse our art and our social work together.
That's the beauty of art. And even on Wednesday, we do a thing here in Philadelphia at the Wordsworth group home for the young ladies. And we go talk to the young ladies. And just this week, the young lady said, "I write, you know, to save my life." You know, and it was just that line just stuck with me like, wow, I get it now. I am writing so I don't snap, so I don't cut my wrist, so I don't take pills. This is why I write right now. You know, she had read the Why I Write poem. I think I had read it the week before. And then this is why I write now. And it was just amazing. Like, she gets it.
Yeah. And as I said, you know, teenagers are kind of famous for putting up those walls. And sometimes I think as an outsider, if you don't know and you pass a group of kids, you don't know.
No.
But I think this poem tells us in many ways what they're actually feeling, who they actually are.
Exactly. Sometimes as adults that don't know children, they think, oh, they're just cold, heartless. The young lady said, "I'm cold-hearted. I've been this way since I was five." They just think they're made of steel. They're just some ugly. No, these are little kids. These are beautiful flowers right here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Let me read a couple of more comments here. "I've loved the Twin Poets for many years. At Marty Moscone, you hang out with all the cool folks." Yes, we try. "Today's guests demonstrate the power and necessities of arts for full development. Can they talk about the problem of decreased time and funds for all kinds of arts in public school?" I don't know how serious, Nandi, this is in Wilmington or in Delaware.
Absolutely. The nation. Yeah, surely. I mean, arts funding in schools. I mean, that's why one of the reasons we're so grateful to be the Poets Laureate, because we're able to visit schools to provide teachers with that support. Because so often, you know, with curriculum changes and this and that, and having to meet criteria for this next testing and this program, and the arts are always forgotten. So having the opportunity to reinfuse the arts into programming, not just for the sake of English class, we were able to visit this month, the Poetry Month, but all throughout the year, you know, to support our counselors and our social workers for mental health issues, that the importance that art and poetry brings to the school environment is very, not just for academic, but social as well.
How about what it brings to Wilmington City Council?
Oh, it's beautiful. I think being an artist, you know, it makes me a very well-rounded legislator. It makes me a very well-rounded individual who understands that the ups and the downs of my community. And as an artist and as a community-based social worker, I understand that the finances, you know, I understand that side, that the budget is very important, and you determine your priorities by where you place your resources. So being a legislator, it gives me that focus to say, if we really value this, we really want things to change, we need to put some resources behind it. And as a legislator and city council person, I think that's important.
We have Bill who's calling us from Chester. Bill, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. Good morning. And gentlemen.
Good morning, sir.
Chester, Pennsylvania, indeed. I'm sure the brothers and Marty are quite familiar. Pops up in the news from time to time. Not necessarily good news. I was wondering if the brothers take their poetry to area high schools with their messages in poetry, and if so, and I'm sure it does, but do they get reactions, or maybe get the reactions from the students, possibly, that they might look at the so-called hip-hop icons, you know, such as Nicki Minaj and, you know, these types in a different light? And I'll listen off the air. Thanks.
Thanks, Bill. Do you want to take that, Nami?
Well, I think that we try to, through our art, I mean, we are, you know, hip-hop artists, you know, this our poetry is hip hop. We are babies of hip hop. We first generation hip hop. We love the music. It's a part of who we are. And we try to show children, you know, children who grew up with this, you know, form of hip hop that's a little bit different than ours. We try to show them the true purpose of hip hop and how it was deeply connected to the art and poetry before it became such just a money making capitalist, you know, not even an art form today. It's just all about generating money. And unfortunately, our children are being robbed of the art and hip hop. So we try to reinfuse that into the conversation.
Definitely. Al? Very much so. And we do a lot. We have a lot of lyrics. I mean, we quote a lot of our favorite MCs and just compare lyrics with the students is what we do sometimes. Okay, what's your hottest bar? You know, I say let them say their hottest rapper's quote, and then I'll say some Ra, you know, or I'll use some KRS-One. So then we'll kind of say, you know, okay, what made that hot? And get them to question their own music, and then they'll be able to see, no, I guess that was kind of whack. You know, I guess Lil Wayne is whack, or that was dumb. You know, why do I like that song? You know, and just talk about, you know, and how they're just enjoying it because it's there, not because it's the greatest thing I ever heard, you know, because, and then just talk to them about the number one video, the number one song, and why it's played all over again, and how you start to like, and it wears you down because your buddies like it, it becomes yours. And when you really didn't like it, when you first heard it, you thought it was garbage. And now it's your favorite. You're walking around singing it like it's your anthem now. And, you know, so, and it happens so often that they don't even realize it's happening, you know, and it's just bringing their standards down daily, where they, like Twin said, they really don't know what music is. They've been spoon fed this garbage where they think this is true music.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm turning them into cultural critics, which they're, you know, pretty good at, right?
Indeed.
An email from Jayshree says, as a parent, I struggle with the feelings like I'm pushing my girls into having dreams that I dream for them. I see so much potential in lots of different things. How do I help them discover being good at things that I see that they're good at? You know, every parent is going to listen to your answer.
Absolutely. I'm sure my daughter's out there listening. So I'll say, you know, just through struggle. I mean, it's not easy, but I think the most thing that we can do as parents is be consistent. As long as we stay consistent with our message and consistent with our support for our children, then that's what enables them to accomplish their goals and their dreams.
I'm looking at the clock, and I do need to save a couple of minutes to play a song from Prince, who died yesterday, but I want to have... See if you could perform the artist formerly known as $$$$. Can
absolutely.
We do that one?
Absolutely. And this would just mention my daughter. This was
exactly.
Written for her and for all young artists. We say children are skilled at the art of asking for money from their parents. So this is to my daughter's artistry. When it comes to my daughter, my heart beats a strange rhythm. When I hear her say, Dad, can I have? Sometimes in a frantic rush, she goes beyond rhyme or reason with ease, belting out the blues. Please, please, please. She sings her solo with one hand outstretched, five fingers wanting to hold cold hard cash. But for now, she holds five-point harmony with ease, notes both high and low. Father still says
no.
Reminiscent of a hip-hop DJ, she transforms her cadence to the given situation. She greets her temporary defeat with a song so sweet. She switches her pitch and goes wholeheartedly into her chorus, inviting inviting me into a duet, as she explains, Dad, there's really no cost to you, because if you pay for it now, and I promise I'll pay you back. But she never says exactly when that transaction will occur. Like, I should just believe her. But much to her dismay, I have to ask questions that a father just has to ask. Like, should I add this $50 to the last $50, or should I just subtract? Because I don't ever remember getting that back. But history has never been her favorite subject, so of course she will never remember that. All of a sudden, daughter smiles and father gives in again.
A poem I think every parent can relate to as well. So about a minute or so before we have to end our discussion, it's been so much fun to have you here. Do you have performances, or you have special things coming up, or is it your poets laureate?
Yes, we keep a full schedule. We're doing a lot of schools right now, but on April 30th, we do have a book signing and an open mic. We're going to start an open mic for artists and kids at a bookstore in Delaware. So that's going to be hopefully a monthly venue where we can have the children from the writing group get up and recite their poems. Right. So that's going to be nice at Misha Books there in Claymont.
And actually visiting, I mean, there's a Poet Laureate schedule on the Division of the Arts website. And thank you to the Delaware Division of Arts for all their support.
They've given
us as Poet Laureates. And tomorrow we'll be down in Lower Delaware, in Sussex, Delaware, which is, we haven't been there in a while. So this is going to be great. Just showing the expansion of arts for Poetry Month is excellent.
Well, it's been such a pleasure to have both of you joining us here in our Philadelphia studio, driving up from Wilmington, Delaware. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us. Enjoy your day. You're very welcome.
Helping us celebrate Poetry Month. And again, Namdi
Chukwuocha.
I feel like I never said your name correctly.
You did. All morning.
I just wanted to make sure that Namdi Chukwuocha is a member of Wilmington City Council. Al Mills is a therapist. They are twin brothers. They are the Poets Laureate of Delaware. And again, our thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. And they do have a new book of poetry, and it's called Homework for Breakfast. Well, we were all extremely sad and upset to learn yesterday that Prince died at the age of 57. And this morning we were listening to a lot of music trying to figure out which one of his songs we would like to play to pay tribute to him for all the wonderful music. And we decided to go kind of on the happy side, and we're going to end things with his 1985 hit, Raspberry Beret.